Welcome back to Living Lab on the Point. I'm Heather Goldstone. If analyzing data isn't sciencey enough for you, some journalists are beginning to call for adopting the scientific method, at least parts of it. And why not? At the heart of it, scientists and journalists are both trying to understand how the world works and why. Scientists may be more focused on the natural world, journalists more on our social systems, but might a dose of scientific rigor benefit journalism, especially if they're taking on the task of analyzing large data sets? Joining us now to discuss the intersection of science and journalism is Gideon Litchfield, global news editor for Quartz.com. Before that, he spent 16 years at The Economist covering everything from the science desk to political uprisings. At the 2012 South by Southwest conference, he co-presented ideas about what journalists could learn from scientists. Gideon Litchfield, welcome to Living Lab.
Hello, thank you.
And Jonathan Stray is still with us. He's a computer scientist, professional journalist, and lead developer of the Overview Project. Now, Gideon Litchfield, what could journalists borrow from the scientific method, and how would that be beneficial?
So just one correction, since we're in the spirit of science and accuracy, it's QZ.com rather than Quartz.com.
Uh-huh.
So what can journalism borrow from science? As you observed, you know, both journalists and scientists are about making sense of the world, and they both make claims about the world and then test that against reality. And there are many differences in the way that they do that. And one of the key differences involves the methods that they use and how rigorous those are, as you've been discussing. And I think Jonathan is going to talk about some of that. One of the other aspects I want to focus on, though, is that scientists are very good at having and collecting a body of knowledge, which is the scientific literature. And they have an agreed-upon way of adding to that knowledge and referring to it. And this is what allows science to move forward, because there's essentially agreement on what constitutes scientific knowledge and how you point back to it.
Now, Gideon, we seem to be having a little bit of a problem with our connection. I think we might try to reconnect with Gideon Litchfield. But Jonathan Stray, as we mentioned, you have a master's in computer science. Do you find yourself in your work as a journalist drawing on scientific methodology as well as the technical skills that you gained from that training?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it is about taking some of the concepts from how science defines knowledge. So, for example, there's the relationship between, talking to one student about student debt problems versus trying to understand how student debt is affecting all students. To do that, you have to start looking at data about students nationally or at the state level or however you're writing your story. So there's this idea of being able to make generalizations. Science is about doing a bunch of individual experiments or studies and then saying, well, you know, we studied, this one volcano here, and we believe that this represents all volcanoes. So there's this ability to extend knowledge from the individual to the general, which is a very powerful idea in science. And sometimes you can do that in journalism, but it's actually very hard to do.
Now, if journalists are analyzing data, thinking about their work in this scientific way, trying to make sure that they have the appropriate scale and the data to back up what they're saying in their story, then, Jonathan Stray, aren't journalists actually acting as scientists rather than journalists? Where is the line there?
It's an interesting question. And these, as we see more interdisciplinary work, these boundaries start to blur a little bit. I would say that a journalist fundamentally has a different commitment than a scientist. Although they may use different skills, the scientist is charged with creating knowledge, right? The point is to learn something new and to be able to verify it and know that it's true. The journalist is also charged with verification, right? Verification has been called the key element of journalism. But the journalist has an additional responsibility, which is they can't just find something is true. They have to be able to communicate that, and they have to know why it's important, and they have to be able to make it relevant to people's lives. And that communication skill is one of the major differences between journalism and science.
Now, Gideon Litchfield, when you presented your ideas about what journalists can draw from scientific method at the South by Southwest conference a couple of years ago. You said that was basically a theoretical or thought exercise. How much reality is there to that? Are we actually seeing the spread of scientific method within the field of journalism?
Well, I think so. I think it's spreading in two very partial ways. I hope you can hear me better this time. One of the ways in which it's spreading is that more rigorous methods of data analysis, like the kind that Jonathan is talking about, are taking hold. Then there are other things which are, you could call them the beginnings of the tools of scientific method for journalism, but they're not really being used in scientific ways. So what are those tools? One is, as I was trying to say earlier, is the idea that there is a body of knowledge that people can point back to and say, look, this has already been demonstrated. We don't need to go over this ground again. And the internet sort of allows you to do that because you can link to other people's work. The difficulty is that there isn't really an accepted standard of, what is reliable work. How do you point to it? Journalists don't have rules about you must always cite your references and so forth. So it's very patchy. Another aspect of science that could be potentially there in online journalism is peer review. So, people can comment on stories. People can link to stories and write their own commentaries on them on their own blogs, or they can tweet about them. That's sort of a semblance of the process of peer review that goes on in science. But again, it's not organized. It's much more patchy. There's no real sense of who has authority to make commentary, who's reliably making commentary. So it's like the framework is possibly there, but it's not being used in a scientific way. And probably one of the key reasons for that is that the people who use the scientific literature and comment on scientific papers are other scientists. And they've all agreed to play by a certain set of rules. But the people who use journalistic knowledge is everybody, is the public. And there's no agreed set of standards for how you report on things, how you comment on them, how you refer to them, and what constitutes reliable knowledge.
Now, in that same presentation, as you're already beginning to touch on here, you note that there are limitations in how much of the scientific method journalists could actually adopt. There are differences in the fundamental underpinnings and structure of journalism versus scientific research that make it impossible to fully adopt the scientific method. So what are some of those limitations?
Well, partly it's that journalistic organizations have different audiences. They have different business models. They have different incentives of what kind of information. So some news organizations, it's important to them to do rigorous, careful work. For some, it's more important to get a lot of traffic and page hits and do fun stuff that people will want to click on. Some are a hybrid of the two. So there isn't a single standard for what kind of work journalists are producing. Then there aren't common agreements on how you refer back to other people's work. So if somebody has done a report in some other news organization, how do you there isn't a common standard on saying you must always cite that person's work and show the basis for the comments that you're making. There isn't also a common standard about transparency of the data that you use. So in some places, like ProPublica, they're actually quite good about showing them the way that they work and the way that they reach their results and often making the data that they used available. But a lot of journalism doesn't work that way, partly because journalists have to protect sources or they don't want to give their competitors an advantage. So there's a lot less transparency about the data that was used and how results were arrived at. So in other words, there are a lot of obstacles that are to do with the business of journalism that prevent it from working like science.
Now, Jonathan Stray, scientific journalism isn't actually a new idea. There are people who have brought up this idea for decades. Is there some reason that it might be particularly important now to take a more rigorous approach to journalism?
Well, one of the things that I teach journalists is that even if you don't fundamentally care about data and all of these sorts of analysis methods, the subjects that you're covering, the people in those subjects do. So whether it's politics or business or medicine or war or any of these things, all of these enterprises now have a huge data component. Data is being used to make decisions. So if you don't understand what they're doing, you can't cover their activities. So I think that makes it more relevant than it used to be. It's also just a lot easier to get access not only to the information, So the raw data is often available online from one source or another. But also the tools and the knowledge. There's never been an easier time to learn how to do this. But I wanted to add one more thing to the list of why science is not like journalism, which is kind of a fundamental problem. In science, you get to repeat an experiment. So if you're measuring the speed of light, you can do it once and then you can try it again, or someone on the other side of the world can try it and hopefully they'll get the same answer. Journalism, by and large, deals with one-off events. You don't get to go back and have an election again and try a different method of reporting it. So no matter how much we can aspire to the scientific ideals of truth, scientific truth is based on reproducibility, which is something that just doesn't exist in journalism.
Now, we've got just less than a minute left here. Gideon Litchfield, though, I wanted to ask, how wedded are these cutting-edge journalism practices to the Internet?
I mean, they're very much tied in with the Internet. I don't think any of what we're talking about would be possible without computers that allow you to process data, the formats of the Internet that allow you to construct very complicated stories and links to other things, and just as importantly, the conversation between people that goes on online between journalists and their audience. So I think that it's a key part of the tool, and that we have yet to see all the possibilities that it enables.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Gideon Litchfield, Global News Editor for QZ.com, Jonathan Stray of AP's Overview Project, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. You can stay in touch with Living Lab Radio all week on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab on the Point is produced by Heather Goldstone, with assistance from Jenny Junker and Alicia Orsini. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Major support for Living Lab is provided by the Grantham Foundation for the Protection of the Environment. Additional support from Michael and Roxanne Zach. Living Lab is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.